The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another edition of Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. He is Michael Coleman. He is the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank. He joins us every single week. A lot of people are like, well, why would I want to listen to a show about the Montgomery Area Food Bank? First of all, it's a great organization. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. But we talk a lot of business stuff. You listen to last week's show about strikes. We found out that Michael Coleman used to be a bad boy. He used to get paddled in school. So you never know. You never know what you're going to hear. And I've never heard of slicing a baseball bat in half and using it as a paddle, but that was well worth the listen right there. So there you have it. First of all, Michael, everything good with you, man?
Yeah, I thought I was still a young man and moved about 80-pound sacks of cement around this weekend, and I realized the next day I'm not a young man anymore. So
that'll do it for you, man.
Because I can't sit up straight, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Your emails, info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. We take emails on all of our shows. We'll read them. Feel free to leave us your city and what your name is so we can read those on our show here on Mission Minded. Of course, you can also hear the show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app, Tony Curry Radio, through Android and Apple. Just pull up TKR and listen to Mission Minded 10 o'clock Monday through Friday right here, Central Time. And of course, wherever you get your podcast, that is the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. You can go back and listen to well over 50, 60, 70 shows. We got a ton of shows. We got some emails we're going to get into. Also, getting into getting rid of conflict between coworkers. And this is interesting, but you said this to me, getting rid of conflict between coworkers without punishment, which I don't know. It almost seems oxymoronic. I don't know how that actually happens, but I want to give it an email here real quick. An email here from a young lady. She wants to know, is AI, the AI boom, screwing over Gen Zers? We had a great show a couple of weeks ago about, kids getting out of college in 2023 and not being ready for the workforce because of COVID, because of their disconnect with authority, because they're late with deadlines. And quite frankly, they're just becoming more introverted. They haven't had the opportunity and they haven't had the want to get back in the workplace. 21% saying they want to work remotely, period. Only 53% of them saying they actually want to work in an office. I don't know about you. I used to love going to work. I used to love going to the office. I liked work. We used to call it the fire ant hill, man. I used to love people going up and down the hallways and the intermingling and the engagement and everything else. And now people just kind of want to be left alone in their own little cubicle and do their own work. And I guess it depends on what kind of work you do. But is AI, and it's the strangest thing, Michael, because we've done about two or three different shows on AI, and I've done probably four or five just on my radio stations alone. Where is this AI stuff has kind of come out of nowhere, has it not?
Yeah, it's coming fast and furious. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of people who are scared to death of it. And I don't even begin to understand it that much. Although I will tell you, I've started using it. I'll give you a great example. So as we've put out in the last couple of shows, we're going to be changing our name. And so we're going to a marketing company, locally here. And so we're talking about how do we market that. And one of the ideas was about getting families to come out and teach their children about, about giving and helping others. And so we could create a program that people could come out to the food bank with their kids and have their kids pack a few boxes. And it teaches them the idea of serving others and helping others in need. And so they suggested, and they just put it in there, like a little children's book that we could publish called Henry Helps Feed the Hungry. So I went on ChatGPT. Yeah. I typed in, write a children's book, Henry Helps Feed the Hungry, and it knocked out the entire book. We printed it out, and I looked at it, and there's very little I would change if I was writing a
really?
Book.
Really?
I mean, it wrote a book while I was sitting here in this meeting. I mean, just that quick, and I thought, this kind of stuff is brilliant. And then you can go over to some of the designer graphics and you're like, okay, this is what I'm looking for. And I even saw one that said, make me a statue of golden cheeseburgers. I mean, cheeseburger, a stack of cheeseburgers made out of gold.
Yeah.
And it came back with a picture of, it looked like it was about eight burgers stacked on top of each other with a bun. The whole thing was gold. And it's so when you think about it, it's so funny the way that email was characterized. And I don't want to be critical of the person who wrote it, but they talk about, is AI screwing the Gen Z? And so what you think about is, well, do you classify it as screwing them if Gen Z has simply been reliant on their own computer skills and like, okay, well, nobody else knows what we know. We're really good in this area. And all of a sudden, ChatGPT or other open AI sources have kind of taken the mystery out of it. Yeah. I mean, like an old fogey like me can go in there and say, hey, here's a children's book written by this topic. I'll give you one more example. So we were looking at, with the new name that we're coming up, is looking at new taglines. So I put in our new name, although it's not officially approved yet, we think it's going to be the new name. And I said, give me 10 taglines. And I would say 7 out of the 10 were really worth considering.
Wow.
And so you think about the creative process when you bring people, like from a marketing perspective, and you bring all your marketing team in here and you go, okay, here's the new name. We got to come up with a tagline. So everybody's just trying to think from scratch and playing with words. And the amount of people you're paying for that and amount of mental effort and mental energy, and you could just go on to OpenAI and just type it in and it spits out 10 quality. Well, I mean, there were 10, they were still quality names, but 7 that were worth me really sitting down and considering. And I'm like, think of how much stuff you can do and how it replaces. And then so then the Gen Z people go, well, wait a minute, that's not fair. They're doing what they're bringing to the table, what we bring to the table. And so society, I think this is part of the challenge right now, is going back and saying, well, then you're going to have to step up your game. You don't get to, you see this all across the IT world right now, is a lot of people are saying, look, I can get what I need myself. I don't have to go through a Gen Zer. And so Gen Z, there's a lot of layoffs and they're like, wait a minute, we had it so good. I remember where they cut out all the lunch carts at Twitter when Elon Musk came through. Mm-hmm. They were doing like 800 lunches a day, like being brought through, paying them lunch, and they cut those kind of perks out. But that's the kind of world they were getting paid a lot, hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're getting all these perks, and now they're finding out, you know what? We're cutting these jobs out. And then they're out there on the job market, and they're realizing, hey, wait a minute, we had it pretty damn good out there. These kind of jobs just aren't out there anymore, you know, and people aren't begging us in part because of this open AI. So, I mean, what Gen Z is recognizing is that our world, our economy, our perspectives, they are constantly changing. And what's true one year can be absolutely the opposite the next year.
I know that in the latest Indiana Jones movie, they used AI on Harrison Ford, and a lot of people were disappointed in that. And they didn't use the AI, though, not to spoil the movie for you. They didn't do it to make Harrison Ford look younger than 80 or 81 years old he is. They used it to make him look like he was back in 1944 so they could tell the story. And that was the only reason they did it. And Harrison Ford even said, listen, I wouldn't have done the movie if they were going to use an AI for me the entire time. What I think is really interesting and sad at the same time is if AI is being used to replace creativity, if you're just talking about, you know, we used to have copywriters in radio all the time. There was a copywriter. This person's job was to write copy for commercials that ran on radio now. And that copywriter was somewhat of a bonehead anyway. You just got all the copy points. You add some phone numbers and you write some copy. It wasn't that difficult to write 30 or 60 seconds of radio copy. But when you're talking about pure creativity, like artwork, which is being used now, AI, movies, which is AI, we've got people taking two or three different artists, musical audience, and creating their own songs. And people don't even, who was it that took Garth Brooks and Taylor Swift and said, here's their new song, and it went viral. And people didn't realize, and it made a song that was a good song. And I'm like, when you're taking out those, so when you're taking the creative prowess out of people's hands, and then, quite frankly, taking the money away from the artist that actually created it, that's going to be a big time issue. But it's out there. I mean, it's out there, and it's pretty amazing. It really is.
Well, And where this goes is you any time you have something like this, then you start going down this path of ethics.
Oh,
so
yeah.
is it, you know, is it ethical for me as a business owner to take advantage of this free software and create my own rather than hire somebody? And I'm like, well, yes. I mean, if it's available, I'm going to use it. Now, I'm not talking about taking somebody's something somebody's created and then manipulating it and then me make money off of it. That's clearly violating ethical boundaries. But what I think is going to, you're going to get the most pushback from is just a lot of people who for a lot of years, because of their skill sets and their abilities, had the upper arm, if you will, in the whole workforce. And now a lot of that's being taken away and they're finding out really that's all they're bringing to the table. So it's pretty easy to replace them if you can get a software to do what they're doing, because going back to what we talked about in the previous shows, they're not bringing a lot else to the table. They're not bringing the dynamic personality. They're not bringing hey, I'm bringing in my network of people with me, because they've chosen to work in a work from home just on a computer. And when I can all of a sudden get a software to do what they're doing, I'm not losing anything else. And so much easier to pay for that software than take on the issues of an employee.
All right. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Keep those emails coming. We'll read them every single week here on Mission Minded. He's Michael Coleman, the CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. I'm Tony Curry, your co-host here on Tony Curry Radio. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week. 10 a.m. Mission Minded, right here on Tony Curry Radio and wherever you get your podcast. All right. So you wrote to me earlier, getting rid of conflict between coworkers without punishment. So if I'm one of your employees listening to the show today, I'm like, oh, I hope he's not talking about me. But the interesting thing is after coworkers, you dotted it without punishment. First of all, what do you mean by trying to get rid of conflict between coworkers without punishment? What do you mean?
Well, you know, I sit back sometimes and I try to look at how much I spend my time dealing with employee conflict. Or, and that could be, and I'm talking about between the two. So there will be an employee who will come in and just rant and rave about somebody else. And it's just human nature. Sometimes you let them, you just listen.
Does that happen a lot?
You know, we're all just humans, and we tend to get, for all sorts of different reasons. It could be that you're just having a bad day. But it could be that, hey, everybody's got their piece of the pie and somebody's got their hands in my, to mix metaphors, somebody's got their hand in my cookie jar.
Yeah.
Or somebody, you know, I told them to do it this way and they did it this way. Just when you've got 50 people in the same organization bumping into each other, trying to all do good jobs, you're just going to have conflict. And then what happens is you tend to get people who, you know, they start to say things. They can be a little passive, but they get somebody who's willing to listen to them. And then you start easily breaking out into little cliques. And what happens is when you total up all that time, all that whispering time, all that gossip time, because, you know, every work group has a grapevine, right? Has that whole network, secret network that permeates every organization. There is so much productivity loss because even if somebody feels slighted, and even though they're sitting at their desk trying to work, they're half their mind's thinking about what somebody's done to them. And so that's really what the whole idea was about. Look, you can reprimand. You can say, all right, you did this to this person. I'm going to mandate that you not do it anymore. And that's what the whole point of the research was. Is that effective? And what they did was they looked at all the data and they came back and they said, well, since we're human, it's hard to change that human behavior or misbehavior that's pretty normal. It's hard to change it just by threatening the change or punishing the change. So the idea was, hey, let's work on resolving the conflict and de-escalating the situation. But that is much more involved time-wise. But it saves you time, it saves you energy, it's better for the culture down the road. And that's the gist of it. as to why I thought it was such an interesting article.
So I've had several different bosses. I could put them in three different groups. I've had the boss that had someone that came in and was constantly the squeak wheel, always complained. I could picture her face right now. Always complained about everything. She had to vent every single day, and he just kind of rolled his eyes and was like, whatever, that's what she does. And then you got the boss that actually listens to that squeaky wheel and then tries to politically correct, I guess, go to the next person, kind of feel them out to find out if what she's actually saying about them is true. He'd even make some type of recommendation. Hey, you may not want to do that, or would just blow it off because he didn't see what she was talking about. And then I had my third boss, which I thought was my favorite boss, only because he'd go, okay, you got a problem with this person? Where are they at? And they, he'd bring everybody into the studio or everyone into the room, and they'd sit down and go, so-and-so is saying you're doing this. Is it true? Do you ever work that way? I tell you what, you get to the end of the argument really, really fast.
Yeah.
But there's also a trust there that you don't feel comfortable going back to the boss then, because the reason you're going to the boss is because you don't want to confront that person in the first place. Does it work?
That's right. Yeah. So I'm always trying to find this middle ground. So when people come in my office and they want to vent, I want that to kind of be a safe space. Cause sometimes if you just let them blow some steam off for about 10 minutes, they just want to be heard. They just want to be, you know, validated. And you say the kind of thing like, yeah, that sounds hard. I appreciate you sticking with it or whatever, without commenting on the other, because you know there's another side. One of the greatest mistakes I ever made, and like I said, the greatest lessons I've learned is through making mistakes. When I was commander in the military, somebody came in and told me, brought their soldier in and said, this happened. And I went ahead and decided how this other person was going to be punished. And went ahead and announced that a punishment. And then that person's supervisor came in and told me a completely different story. I'm like, what an idiot. How stupid am I that I did not take the time to listen to both sides? So even if it's a trusted employee that I value highly, if they're in my office venting, I know that there's another side to the story and that they could probably be equally venting back. So what I'm trying to do is say, okay, I'm going to let you vent. But if that person's venting repeatedly about the same situation, then I'm like, okay, time out. Let's get the players involved and we're going to work through this, because what I know for a fact is people do not like confrontation. We are like electricity. We're going to take the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. And if I can just go in and bitch and bellyache to somebody, whether it's a coworker, whether it's a boss, whether it's anybody else, I'm going to keep doing that because that's easiest, because I don't have to look at myself.
Yeah.
And when I come in with a coworker and I'm sitting them down, I'm like, okay, let's listen to what you have to say. And they say it, but then that coworker comes back at them with some pretty legitimate things. And what you find is both people have some things, have some perspective changing that needs to take place. And so I'm always trying to find, when is it time to call everybody in and put this to rest?
Yeah. Dr. Josh Klapo, my radio partner, is a psychiatrist and a psychologist. And, you know, that's his job. He gets called into big corporations to deal with these things. He's like, Tony, you would not believe these corporations that make billions and billions of dollars. And these guys at the top, they just can't get out of their own way. There is so much drama between employees. What percentage of your time, you've been running businesses your entire life, what percentage of your time is dealing with drama or conflict between employees? I'm always, as a business owner that's only got a couple people on my staff, I don't have that issue. But I'm usually dealing with one or two people. When you're dealing with thousands of people, what percentage of your time is dealing with conflict between employees?
Well, let's say directly 10%, but here's the indirect part that really permeates everything you do. So let's say I've got two directors and I know that they've had conflict or that they really don't care for each other or whatever. So anytime that I'm talking to one and I'm asking them, and I know they're going to be working with that other person, I already know there's a potential for more conflict. So it's part of that meeting. You see what I'm saying? That vibe, because I'm like, oh, I know that if I'm asking them to do something together, or if one of their employees is going to be working with the other one of the employees, that I have to think about What's the fallout? Will there be fallout from that, or will that be, is that going to come back to hurt in any way? And so it's always there. It's not that I'm always having to deal with it, but it's always on my mind. It's always in the room if I'm dealing with one of the parties that's having difficult with somebody else, having some challenges with somebody else. And so it never really escapes you completely. And that's why I really value employees who come in and just say, look, I'm here to do the best job I can. If I step on somebody's toes, I'm not going to go complaining and whining behind their back. I don't want them to do it this way. I'm going to be very forthright and be very nice, but speak truth, because I want to resolve issues. If I'm doing something wrong, tell me, and I want to change that. I mean, it's people that just have healthy outlooks on life that are just the best employees, because they're not here to create drama. And if they see drama starting to come about out of something they're involved in, then they work proactively to squelch that. And so they will go to somebody and say, "Oh, I notice you're upset. Is it something I've done? Is it something we can work out?" Or if somebody comes to them and accuses them, they don't get defensive and strike back. They say, "Oh, I'm sorry. I had no idea I was doing that. I will work to change that." And the truth of the matter is, it's amazing when I talk to people how often I say, if you'll just talk to this person, I bet they wouldn't do that. They're likely not even aware. But they already get it in their heads. No, they're doing that on purpose. I know they're doing it on purpose. So it's not going to do any good to go talk to them. And that's almost never the case, is that it doesn't do good to talk to them. It's just people, they are resistant to it because it's awkward when you confront somebody. And so they avoid it, and they would rather just stay in there. And so some people just go, okay, well, then I'm just going to start issuing threats. And I'm like, no. This is not something where somebody needs to be threatened for. I agree wholeheartedly with the researcher here. Bring them together, talk about it, and if you can resolve it, now you've eliminated a lot of future downtime or unproductive time, because now they're working together rather than standing in opposition to one
We're
another.
humans, that's what we do. We're not all going to get along, and it's certainly, I mean, if you got people that certainly in the workforce that aren't getting along, they're probably not going to get along outside the workforce as all. This is Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman. Fantastic show. Montgomery Area Food Bank, mafb.org, and of course you can hear the show at least 5 days a week, 10 o'clock Central Time, right here on the TKR app and wherever you get your podcast. So let me ask you this, you're the top dog, you're the CEO there. How often, when there is conflict inside of a workforce, do you delegate the problem to one of your leaders? Or is that something that you take again, if it's one of your leaders that's bitching and moaning about someone, that's going straight to you. But do you ever find a leader in your warehouse or your workforce and say, listen, will you handle this for me?
Yeah, I mean, and I try to empower my directors who are the next level down from me. And when they come and they give me a heads up, hey, I'm handling this. Sometimes I feel like I just want to fix it, and so I feel the urge to step in. But no, I just say, are you comfortable dealing with this? If they say yes, or if they say, hey, do you have some thoughts? Do you have some suggestions? I want to empower them. Because I don't want them turning like, oh, let's go to daddy and let daddy fix it. I want you to empower you to go and sit down and do the same things. And then I will coach them and guide them. And then even if it doesn't work out well, then we come back and kind of sit down and talk back through it. And I try to get them to see, I don't say, well, this is what I would have done, but I would have, we walk through like, well, since that didn't work out, what else do you think you could have done? And we talk it out. And I love the Socratic method of teaching, which is not just telling somebody the answer or what you think's the answer. It's leading them in a way that they is of self-discovery. And so lots of times when you're just there to bounce some ideas or bounce some questions off somebody, they end up in the right spot, but they take ownership of it, because it's more their idea rather than being told, oh, well, that was never going to work. What you should have done was X, Y, and Z. You just lead them down this path and they go, you know what? Now that I think about it, I really should have done this. And I'm like, yeah. And then I affirm that. And then hopefully for next time, and through that mistake, they're going to grow as a leader. If I don't allow them to make those mistakes, if I step in to fix everything, they're not better off from one incident to the next.
Are you one of those guys, and we only have a couple minutes here left, are you one of those guys that likes to mix it up with your employees outside the work block, the workforce, just to, so people can see people in a different light?
Yeah, I mean, I try to tell people, look, I try to be authentic. The same guy you're going to see now is the same guy you'd see on Saturday night if you were to see me out and about in the town, or if you were to see me at Sunday at church. I mean, I try to be the same guy. And but I also tell them I'm very honest. And I'm like, look, if you're around me all the time, boy, you're going to see me in my not greatest moments and things that I'd look back with regret or maybe even embarrassment, because there's going to be times that I lose my cool or I don't. You know, you and I are sitting there and we can clearly and, you know, talk about what's the right here and what's right there. But when the rubber hits the road, you know, I don't always practice what I preach, unfortunately. And so, but I'm okay with showing my flaws to other people because I want them to understand that that transparency is healthy for people to, that if you're putting up a front for people, people can never really get down and know who you are if I don't let them see me as I truly am, which are flaws and all. And so, yes, it's risky. Yes, there's some boundaries you have to put up. But I think it's good that people see you in different environments and different situations.
Michael, as always, great show. Tell people how they can help you out. I know you have a lot. I knew when you took this CEO job about a year ago, I knew you were going to make some major changes. It was going to be awesome. But tell people what you got going on.
Yeah, we're real excited about all the work we're doing. We're getting into some vet hunger. We're getting into some college hunger. Just so many different things making an impact and really just trying to find out how to help the people in our area. We'd love to help our audience. You can get in touch with me through LinkedIn or reach out to mafb.org. But also, I always want to encourage people to go out to their local food banks. Reach out, whether it's food bank, whether it's food pantry, just reach out to your local area and help you. Be mindful of those in your community who are battling hunger and food insecurity. And be a part of helping our neighbors in need feel loved and part of their community.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.